Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, July 17th, 2020. Section A. Coming Sunday. Blue Door bar owner wants to be heard. What's it like to be totally helpless while a chief executive of the state orders your business closed? Erica Mann, owner of the Blue Door Bar in North Midland, has come forward and addressed being shut down and feeling like there is a target on the back of her business. Not once, but twice, did Governor Greg Abbott order the closure of Texas bars for public health reasons. As she says in an op-ed that will appear in Sunday's Reporter Telegram, that will be 87 of the last 116 days. The most recent closure, she wrote, took place June 26th with 3 hours' notice. When announcing the executive order, Abbott stated, "At this time, it is clear that the rise in cases is largely driven by certain types of activities, including Texans congregating in bars." Mann wrote that she believes bars are being singled out. Texas bars, their owners, employees, vendors, cleaning staff, and musicians are being discriminated against and decimated, Mann wrote in the op-ed. While the governor and his team still receive checks, we are applying for unemployment. We are taking out loans we can't afford. We are losing health insurance. We are draining safety nets and savings. We are riddled with anxiety, stress, and sleepless nights. There is no word from Austin about when bars possibly might reopen. For now, Mann is calling for state leaders to provide compensation until property that has essentially been seized is released back to us. Read more in our Sunday edition. Coronavirus. City. Cases in July rise to 638. 25th death reported by Stuart Doreen. S-D-O-R-E-E-N at HearstMP.com. The number of confirmed cases announced Thursday rose to 41, according to information from the Midland Health Department. One day after a dip in the daily total to 32, the number of cases bounced back to more than 40 and increased the total number of cases during the pandemic to 1,339. There are 839 active cases, 475 cases that have recovered, and 16 cases in the hospital, according to the health department. The 41 cases also pushed the total number of cases during the first 16 days of July to 638. That is 47.6% of the total cases during the pandemic. Thursday's report also includes the 25th person to have died from coronavirus-related issues. The patient, who died Wednesday, was a man in his 90s being treated at Midland Memorial Hospital. He was the 10th to die since July 4th. Health Department statistics also show that 30-somethings play a big role in more than 40 cases. There were 17 cases in the 30 to 39 range, 41% of the total. That pushed the number of 30-somethings to have tested positive to 300. Only the 20-somethings have more, with 350. Energy. Diamondback, Concho, among companies restarting production. By Paul Takahashi and Sergio Chapa from the Houston Chronicle. Midland-based Diamondback Energy said Tuesday it had joined other drillers in restarting oil production at wells shut down during the oil crash this year. Diamondback said Tuesday it began pumping oil in June from formerly closed wells, a month after it had taken 9,000 barrels of oil per day out of production in response to the loss of demand and low oil prices. With oil prices having recovered significantly since the decision to curtail production was made last April, Diamondback returned this production through the month of June with minimal associated cost, CEO Travis Stice said in a statement. Diamondback, which is active in the Permian Basin of West Texas, said it drilled 58 horizontal wells and completed 15 wells for production in the second quarter. The driller, which saw the number of its operating rigs fall from 7 to 7 from 20 on March 31st, plans to operate 5 or 6 rigs and employ 3 or 4 completion crews for the rest of the year. Diamondback is one of several energy companies restarting wells and production as coronavirus-related restrictions ease around the world. Concho Resources and Parsley Energy are reopening existing wells, while ConocoPhillips and EOG Resources said they plan to increase production in the third quarter. The companies are returning wells to production as U.S. crude oil inventories have begun to decline, according to the Energy Information Administration. Commercial crude oil inventories on July 10th stood at 531.7 million barrels, a decrease of 7.5 million barrels from the previous week. Meanwhile, U.S. refineries processed 14.3 million barrels of crude oil per day, a decrease of 38,000 barrels per day, even as they increased gasoline and diesel production. Running at 78.1% of capacity, U.S. refineries produce an average of 9.1 million barrels of gasoline per day and 4.9 million barrels of diesel per day. U.S. crude oil imports averaged 5.6 million barrels per day last week, a decrease of 1.8 million barrels from the previous week. Despite the draws, U.S. crude oil inventories are still 17% higher than the 5-year average for this time of year. West Texas Intermediate, the U.S. benchmark for crude, settled Wednesday at $41.20 in New York. Small Bites by J.C. Lewis. Far West Coffee will be community gathering place. It took 5 days for Olaf Luna and Christopher Benninghoff to raise the $25,000 needed for their planned Far West Coffee. Facebook is at facebook.com/Far West Coffee Shop, which will be located at 2040 Cuthbert Avenue. The funds raised through Kickstarter will go toward finishing the interior hiring of staff and stocking the shop. The new shop is a dream about to come true for the men who have been making coffee at pop-ups since 2017. "It started just with love for coffee," Benninghoff said. "For me, looking around Midland and Odessa, looking at specialty coffee, we just couldn't really find what we wanted." Lune said they both have been home brewing specialty coffee before they met. When they met through their jobs and discovered their love for coffee, they decided to start doing pop-ups to offer their coffee to people in Midland. "From the beginning, opening a coffee shop was just a natural progression and our end goal," Benninghoff said. "We have slowly stepped into the process over the last 3 years." Benninghoff has been looking through videos taken 3 years ago when they first started, and they had been telling people that eventually they would have a brick-and-mortar shop. "We wanted to see if it was actually going to be a business, and if Midland really wanted this," Lune said. "At our first pop-up, we didn't even sell coffee. We just sold our merchandise and gave away the coffee." They have worked full-time during this entire process. Lune said they were working the whole weekend when their pop-ups were in full swing, which meant another 30 to 40 hours on top of their full-time jobs. "They get their roasted coffee from Loyal Coffee Roasters, located in Colorado Springs, which is where and how they first started doing pop-ups. We were working in Colorado Springs, and we were leaving town on a whim. We wanted some coffee before leaving town," Benninghoff said. "We landed on what we thought was a coffee shop, but was actually their roastery. We walked in expecting to get coffee and ended up making friendships and relationships." He said Loyal inspired them to make their dream a reality. On their way home from Colorado Springs, they started planning for what Far West Coffee would become. "When the coffee shop opens, they will be able to host 75 people. Lune said they plan to serve pastries and are looking for people to collaborate with. They will also have a kitchen to be able to serve food. One of our values is that we want to offer the best that we can, Lune said. We are on the hunt to collaborate with local bakers. The duo wants the coffee shop to be a gathering place for the community and would like the shop to be a home for events. We started with the fact that we wanted good coffee in Midland, but we also wanted a place of community and culture, Benninghoff said. A place that not only could we call home, but our city could call home. A place where people can find equality, rest, a place of peace, find friends and family. That's what we have built our whole business on.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, July 17, 2020. Two-vehicle wreck. Midland Fire Department responded to a two-vehicle wreck Wednesday at the corner of La Mesa Road and Kentucky Avenue. At least one person was transported to Midland Memorial Hospital with injuries. Notes, cards being collected for MMH. Senior Life Midland is collecting love notes for the healthcare workers at Midland Memorial Hospital to let them know how much they are appreciated. Residents may participate by dropping off a card or note at Senior Life Midland Office, 3301 Sinclair Avenue. There will be a box at the front door during business hours. After hours, slide the note card under the door, according to a press release from the nonprofit. Messages will be collected through Tuesday. Grace Lutheran plans VBS. Grace Lutheran Church, 3000 West Golf Course Road, is planning a drive-in VBS 9 to 10:30 a.m. Wednesday. The theme is Rainforest Explorers, Jesus Leads the Way. There will be puppets at the rainforest and a collection of monetary donations for the West Texas Food Bank. Safety protocols will be in place. Space is limited. For more information or to register, call 697-3221. City changes watering schedule. The City of Midland has adjusted the watering schedule from 2 days a week to 4 days a week, according to a press release from the city spokeswoman. Even-numbered addresses can water on Sunday, Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Odd-numbered addresses can water on Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. The Utilities Department says residents should not overwater the lawn and should watch for puddles or runoff from sprinklers. Hospice needs face masks. These select area volunteer opportunities and events are provided by MSS Connections, a program of MSS made possible by the Warren Charitable Foundation. Hospice of Midland. Needs face masks for clients and needs volunteers. Contact Alice Guzman, 682-2855, AGUZMAN, at hospiceofmidland.org. Recording Library of West Texas is looking for narrators. Must be at least 16. Can volunteer at home. Contact Cindy, 682-2731. Cindy at recordinglibrary.org. Keep Midland Beautiful. Trash for Cash. Contact 688-7745. Doug Russell Pool is open today. The city's pools, Doug Russell and Washington Family Aquatic Center, are open on alternating days during coronavirus pandemic. Doug Russell is open today for 2 3-hour sessions, noon to 3 p.m. and 4 to 7 p.m. Passes are $3 and go on sale at the pool 30 minutes before opening. Passes are good only for the day of purchase. Today in history. Today is Friday, July 17, the 199th day of 2020. There are 167 days left in the year. On this date, in 1862, during the Civil War, Congress approved the Second Confiscation Act, which declared that all slaves taking refuge behind Union lines were to be set free. In 1962, the United States conducted its last atmospheric nuclear test to date, detonating a 20-kiloton device, codenamed Little Feller 1, at the Nevada test site. In 1975, an Apollo spaceship docked with a Soyuz spacecraft in orbit in the first superpower link-up of its kind. In 1997, Woolworth Corporation announced it was closing its 400 remaining Five and Dime stores across the country, ending 117 years in business. In 2009, former CBS anchorman Walter Cronkite died in New York at 92. In 2014, Eric Garner, an unarmed black man accused of selling loose, untaxed cigarettes, died shortly after being wrestled to the ground by New York police officers. A video of the takedown showed Garner repeatedly saying, "I can't breathe." Garner's family received $5.9 million from the city in 2015.
The opinion page. Our view. It's sad that someone would lash out at local healthcare workers. I don't have to tell anyone how stressful these times are in Midland. Life is uncertain. It is impossible to know what will happen tomorrow, much less next month, when about 30,000 of our children are expected to fill Midland's schools. It is not a good time for those in the oil business, retail, restaurants, bars, and education, to name a few. People who are making a good living last year are unemployed. Is that fair? Nope. I could say that the community is used to oil's cyclical economy, but that just doesn't feel right, not right now. Midland Health Chief Nursing Officer Kit Breedemus said earlier this week that he and his staff are being increasingly bombarded with negative comments and criticism that fill up our social media, our emails, and our texts, and it's starting to wear. When I heard this, I couldn't help but wonder who has chosen the pandemic's frontline workers as their whipping boys and girls. It's a sad day indeed that Breedemus felt the need to ask the haters to allow those taking care of our fellow Midland County residents to have a moment's peace. I cannot begin to explain the feelings of defeat and frustration that come from when you've poured yourself fully into the care of a dying or ill patient just to be met with certain criticism and anger. I am not sure what would cause someone to lash out at doctors and nurses walking the halls of Midland Memorial Hospital. Could it be the poison that is today's political conversations? Maybe. A doctor's choice words for the regional medical community that his ideas are the silver bullet? Possibly. A toxic culture where conversations are replaced with social media bullying and the loss of a needed filter for person-to-person dialogue. I think that is getting closer to the truth. In the end, it doesn't matter. Midlanders should be better than those lashing out at the healthcare workers who are trying their best to make sure tomorrow isn't another day when one more patient is added to the coronavirus tote board. We are better than that, right? I want everyone listening to know that we have the entire community's best interests at heart, Breedemus wrote. You are all our family and friends, and believe me when I say we are trying our best. I encourage everyone to please take the time to acknowledge our frontline caregivers and everyone who works in the hospital to provide care for our patients. So I'm asking you to please take the time today to drop a message of kindness to a healthcare worker. It's incredibly sad that he has to ask. But today, here's my message. For those with the unenviable task of going head-to-head with coronavirus, thank you. Your task today is much greater than anything I could ever imagine. You have put your health on the line to take care of the community. And for that, I want to give my heartfelt thanks. You deserve it. Signed, Stuart Doreen.
Obituaries for Friday, July 17th. David Earl Miller. David Earl Miller, 72, of Odessa, passed away Wednesday, July 15th. He was born December 11th, 1947, in Brownwood to Thomas Jefferson Davis Miller and Murdy Lee Slate Miller. He married Joy Yvonne Westbury in 1969. Surviving him are his son, Timothy Fushi, and wife Stephanie of Odessa, six daughters, Tammy Torres of Odessa, Tanya Garcia and husband Adam of Goldsmith, Teresa Miller and wife Laquita of Odessa, Trinity Brown and husband Johnny of Odessa, Tina Langham and husband Craig of Gardendale, and Tony Strickland of Electra. Three brothers, Thomas Tommy Miller, James Miller and wife Jane of Brownwood, Roy Miller of Cleburne. Three sisters, Vonda Jean Evans Williamson of Early, Murdy Fulton and Elizabeth Cat Wilkins Lunsford, both of Odessa. 31 grandchildren and numerous great-grandchildren, numerous nieces and nephews and extended family members. He was preceded in death by his parents, his wife, Joy, four sisters, Verna Lee Hartzell Fox, Dolly Dot Chamberlain, Ollie Modine Van Huss, and Martha Shirey, and one infant brother, Johnny Miller. Visitation will be held Friday, July 17th at Acres West from 4 to 6 p.m. Condolences to the family may be sent online at acreswestfuneral.com. Mary Ola Tipton Crider. Mary Ola Tipton Crider died peacefully at home in Odessa, July 13th, at the age of 98. She was born November 14th, 1921, in Deering, Missouri, to Andrew and Aletha Crowell Tipton. She married Jack Crider in 1945. Mary is survived by her daughter, Donna Kirkland of Odessa, son David Crider and wife Nancy of Roswell, New Mexico, son-in-law Steve Nance of Barksdale, five grandchildren, nine great-grandchildren, and three great-great-grandchildren. She was preceded in death by her parents, her husband Jack, sisters Opal Fulkerson and Lila Meader, brother Burl Tipton, daughter Dale Crider Nance, and son-in-law Ken Kirkland. Visitation will be held from 7 to 9 p.m. Saturday, July 18th at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home in the chapel. Graveside services will be held at 10 a.m. Sunday, July 19th at Monahan's Memorial Cemetery with Reverend Jimmy Braswell officiating. Services are entrusted to Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home of Odessa. Death notices. Tartar Coleman Sr. Tartar Coleman Sr., 88, of Odessa, died Tuesday, July 14th. A graveside service was held July 17th at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Christy Ramirez Diaz. Christy Ramirez Diaz, 51, of Midland, died Wednesday, July 15th, in Midland. A funeral service will be held at 11 a.m. July 18th at American Heritage Funeral Home in Midland. Monty Jackson. Monty Jackson, 65, of Odessa, died Thursday, July 16th. Services are pending with Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Friday, July 17th, 2020. Section A. Student Brings Medical Skills Back. By Ruth Campbell. Third-year medical student Amanda Bell has come home. Raised in Greenwood, Bell graduated from Greenwood High School and went to college at West Texas A&M University, where she had a double major in biochemistry and biology. She is getting her medical degree from Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center. I've been making my way back, first in Lubbock for the past 2 years, and now I finally am back home, so I'm really excited about that, Bell said in a phone interview. She is leaning toward a specialty in internal medicine or one of the specialties such as pulmonology, cardiology, or gastroenterology. Bell plans to stay in the area when she finishes her medical education. West Texas, particularly the Permian Basin, has always been my home, and it's where so many of the people I love are. and it's always cared for me, so I hope that one day I'm able to return that same level of care back and more," Bell said. Dr. Gary Ventolini, professor and regional dean, University Distinguished Professor at the School of Medicine at Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center, Permian Basin, said it is always an honor and a pleasure to have local medical students training with us. Their unique perspective enhances our diversity and contributes to improve the Permian Basin healthcare, Ventolini stated in an email. Michael Calloway, Regional Assistant Dean in the Office of Medical Education at TTU HSC, agreed. "I think anyone involved with education and learners can appreciate what a pleasure it is to be blessed with learners who are both academically strong and excited about learning. Amanda is clearly such a learner. I'm also really grateful and excited about Amanda's contagious enthusiasm about all things Permian Basin. I know her hometown roots and positive leadership will improve the experience for her whole class of medical students," Calloway stated in an email. As far back as Bell can remember, she's wanted to go into medicine. Her mother, Diana Bell, is a registered nurse at Midland Memorial Hospital. Her father is a probation officer, and her younger brother is heading to Angelo State University to take the pre-med route. "My mom, she's a registered nurse. I think she might have had something to do with instilling that in me and that desire to help others and whatnot," Bell said. Entering the medical field in the time of COVID-19 presents a challenge, but one Bell said she's excited about. "I think it's a time when you're really going to be needed for sure. But seriously, I think it's definitely an unprecedented time, an uncertain time, and there's a lot of things that there's not really a good or a right answer for yet. That can be kind of scary, but I also think it also kind of solidifies the reason we wanted to go into medicine in the first place. I would assume that most people who go into medicine are doing that because they want to help others and they want to be there in times of crisis and when things aren't going right. It's scary, but it's also part of what it entails," Bell said. At this time, she said the students are kind of sheltered from the virus since they aren't full-fledged doctors yet. "We're still in training," Bell said. "We're still learning, so we're kind of shielded from a lot of that, unfortunately. But it is kind of interesting to see certain concepts applied from class. We learned about the coronavirus and SARS and MERS and things like that in our lecture classes over the past 2 years, and you read the news in a different way once you have all of that background information, I guess you could say. It's definitely uncertain, for lack of a better word. SARS stands for Severe Acute Respiratory Syndrome, and MERS stands for Middle East Respiratory Syndrome. Having her mother as a nurse helps, but there's even been times when she doesn't know the answers to things, but it's at least nice to have someone to sit there and be uncertain with," Bell said. TTU HSC has 23 third-year students and 25 fourth-year students. "Our campus only has third and fourth-year students. All TTU HSC medical students do their first 2 years at our Lubbock campus," Emily Haliva of Communications and Marketing stated in an email. Bell said she thinks this particular class will have a strong bond because they are going into medicine at an unprecedented time. "We all have to kind of find our way and struggle through it together, so I think it will be memorable and a bit of a closer bond," Bell said. The Odessa Chamber of Commerce hosted a virtual reception for the third-year medical students over Zoom the week of July 6th. Students were given gift bags from the chamber. Medical Center Hospital President CEO Russell Tippin, State Representative Brooks Landgraf, Republican Odessa, and Chamber President and CEO Renee Earls were among the speakers on Zoom, either in person or by video, Haliva wrote. It was nice. I definitely felt warm and welcomed. You could tell that everybody there wanted to show their support, and they did as much as they could, given the limits of the little computer screen. But they gave us goodie bags. It was a nice little virtual get-together, Belle said. Phased-in opening possible for ECISD by Ruth Campbell. With a deluge of guidance coming its way, Ector County ISD continues planning to open school August 12th. But it also is taking into account the local health situation, survey results from staff, parents, and students in its decision-making process. Superintendent Scott Murray said the State Education Commissioner Mike Morath has referred to a phase-in process lasting for 3 weeks to start school. But during the ECISD Board of Trustees meeting Tuesday, Murray said the governor informed the district that the three-week period of time may be expanded. We will be looking at that guidance. We expect that new guidance will be released from TEA Thursday, July 16th, and we'll look at that guidance and consider its implications on ECISD, Murray said in a media call Wednesday. The phase-in process simply means that as a school district, we're able to gradually, over time, increase the number of students that we are serving. More information about that for our families is coming, but we are excited that the governor and the commissioner are expanding the phase-in, as that allows us a chance to roll out the health safeguards that we'll put in place for our students, as well as the remote and face-to-face learning experiences we're providing, Murray added. Registration for school has started. Families can find the information on the ECISD website, but for families that don't have access, ECISD plans to have a registration roadshow from July 27th through July 31st. We will have locations throughout Ector County. Families may visit those locations and register on-site for their children to attend one of the schools in ECISD. So once again, the registration roadshow will begin in ECISD July 27th. More information about that is forthcoming. We will share the specific locations around our county that our families can visit and register their children for school. Again, that is available right now on the ECISD website, Murray said. EctorCountyISD.org. During the past several weeks, Murray said the district has conducted community surveys regarding the return to school. In fact, about 12 to 13,000 members of our community, our family members, completed a survey. 35% of our families have currently indicated they would like for their children to experience the upcoming school year in a virtual environment. And 65% of our families have indicated they would like to have their children in a face-to-face environment, as long as their kids are safe in that particular space. Murray added that the surveys have informed the district's plans. We want to make sure that the parents in our community have a choice as to how their kids will be experiencing learning during the 2021 school year. We're excited to be able to offer both a virtual opportunity for kids and a face-to-face opportunity. It's important, however, as we think about that face-to-face opportunity, in order for us to do that effectively, we've got to make sure as a community that we're taking care of ourselves. Currently in ECISD and in our community, our health situation is not at a place that we can safely bring back kids to our system. In fact, we see the COVID-19 cases on the rise in our community, and it would be very difficult today if we were to make the decision to bring back students into our school district. We're a month away from the potential start of school, that being August 12th. And our hope is that the members of our community, not only our students and families, but all members of our community, will use appropriate health care guidance and really take care of not only yourself, but those around you. Make sure that you're washing your hands frequently. Make sure that you're wearing a face covering or face mask. And make sure that you're maintaining social distance with those individuals who are in our community once you leave your home, Murray added. If we do a good job of taking care of the community, the district will be able to bring back more students when school starts August 12th. But the health of our community will determine the number of students that we're able to serve. So we really implore all members of our community to make sure that you're following the local guidance, he said. Another survey ECISD has conducted is among staff members, asking them about their preferences for returning to school in the upcoming year. We're excited to be able to report that 97% of the staff members in ECISD are ready to come back to work in whatever capacity we may be needing them to serve the students, Murray said. Our folks are ready to come back and educate the kids in our county, and we were really thrilled about the participation in that survey from our staff and look forward to welcoming our staff members back as we invite 34,000 kids to experience learning again, either in a face-to-face environment or in a virtual space, Murray said. Asked about a Texas Tribune report that the health department could order schools closed if the prevalence of COVID-19 cases is too high, Murray said he hopes that is not the case. But in our community right now, we're living in a hot zone. A statistic I saw today, July 15th, was 25% of those individuals who are currently testing in our community are testing positive for the virus. It would be very difficult to serve kids in a face-to-face environment if indeed that statistic is the same statistic on August 12th. So we hope that won't be the case, but certainly the county judge and even the mayor, they have the ability to look at the healthcare situation in our own community and make some decisions to close facilities, not only for school, but for other businesses and industries as well in our community. Murray concedes that the messaging from all the various entities has been challenging. I go back to those two words that we've used a lot over the last many months, flexibility and agility. Probably the best example occurred last night, July 14th, at our board meeting. So I'm providing at the meeting a quick update on the opening of schools, just giving highlights. One of the comments I made was about the phase-in process. And last night at 6 o'clock, the phase-in was 3 weeks. During the meeting, the governor announced that the phase-in process will actually be longer than 3 weeks, and we'll be hearing more about that. That is how rapidly information changes in our state. But at the same time, while information constantly changes, I understand the reason for those changes, Murray said. Currently in Texas, he said, COVID-19 is out of control in many places, and it forces the leaders, governor, commissioners, mayors, and county judge to make decisions that, while they may be unpopular, are the right decisions so the community can remain safe. He said some employees have expressed concern about pre-existing conditions or the health of a family member. Certainly, all of us will have to continue to be flexible and agile as decisions that each of us make as leaders will be adjusted over the next several days and months, and hopefully not longer than months. But we'll see what happens, Murray said. We'll do everything within our power to make sure that we keep all of our staff members as safe as we possibly can if they choose to return to work. COVID-19 forces shift changes for ECSO and OPD by Royal McGregor. Ector County Sheriff Mike Griffiths said during a phone interview Thursday morning that COVID-19 has presented a wealth of problems to his department. One constant dilemma is ensuring all patrol shifts are filled. Sheriff Griffiths said the coronavirus has forced ECSO to switch shifts around, but he said that his deputies took the change in stride. We have had to do some reassignments, Griffiths said. We have had to call people in to cover on shifts that are short. Along with that, we have a couple of individuals who have been injured, so that kind of put us in a bind, too. We are getting everything covered. We just had to do some reassigning and making sure we have all the positions covered on shift. Odessa Police Department Deputy Chief Matt Davidson also said during a phone interview that OPD is also seeing patrol shift changes. Davidson explained that if an officer is experiencing symptoms, they are asked to report those to their supervisor. Davidson said an officer has to be fever-free for 72 hours, and if they are showing respiratory problems, they have to be symptom-free for 10 days. As any manpower shortage, we have to fill it with overtime, Davidson said. An officer would have to work extra hours. I wouldn't say we are seeing a lot of overtime, but it's consistent. We are always trying to catch up to fully staffed, but that's very difficult. Sheriff Griffiths confirmed over the phone that one ECSO deputy has tested positive for COVID-19. He said the deputy showed mild symptoms, quarantined, and has returned to work. The city of Odessa detailed after a Freedom of Information request that 7 OPD officers have tested positive as of Thursday afternoon. To combat deputies and officers contracting COVID-19, Sheriff Griffiths and Davidson each said their respective departments have mandated masks and gloves while interacting with the public. Sheriff Griffiths also said if ECSO personnel are working in an isolated area, that a mask isn't necessary, but if someone is working in a shared office environment, they are required to wear masks. Essentially, this thing could potentially wipe agencies out for a period of time, Griffiths said. So far, we've been blessed. I hope we continue to be. Davidson said there are many jobs that OPD can't do from the confines of their homes, but he explained the people who are able to work from home have been allowed to do so. We have some jobs that you just can't do from home, Davidson said. You can't do patrol work from home. That requires in-person with citizens. Other jobs, we have laptops that connect to the internet to where they can do their job from home. It depends on what their responsibilities are. COVID-19 news. Editor's note. Ector County last updated COVID-19 numbers Wednesday afternoon. Ector County total cases, both confirmed and probable, 2,197. Ector County negative, 9,414 out of 12,422 tested, with 811 pending, 22 deaths. Recovered, 911. Active, 1,264. Midland County, 1,339 confirmed, 25 deaths. Texas, 292,656 confirmed with 2,992,102 tested. Total Texas deaths, 3,561. U.S. cases, 3,483,832 total confirmed, and 136,938 deaths. Find out more at co.ector.tx.us or dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. Quick hits. Memorial. The Odessa LULAC number 4960 and the Midland LULAC number 22397 have scheduled a Justice for Vanessa Memorial in remembrance of Vanessa Guyen, 2 p.m. Sunday at the American Legion, back parking lot, 2701 East 8th. Speakers will be Becca Haberman, Maria Gonzalez, Angel Munoz, Sunshine Thompson, Maricela Valenzuela, and Angelica Hidalgo. For more information, call Jesse Porras at 770-9423 or Tony Morgan at 308-0435, online tinyurl.com/y7345ARO. Clay Chute Fundraiser. Share, Sharing Hands, a Respite Experience, has scheduled Shooters That Share, July 24th at Windwalker Farms, 2551 County Road 2801 in Stanton. Registration starts at 9 a.m. Funds go to support SHARE, a nonprofit organization dedicated to caring for families who care for a child with special needs. COVID protocol will be taken to assure everyone's safety. Six-man teams, $175 per shooter, lunch included. Sponsorships are available. To pre-register, sponsor, or for more information, call Rachel Reinert at 432-818-1257. Email rreinert at sharewtx.org or visit shootersthatshare.com. Odessa College set to welcome students back in the fall. Odessa College looks forward to welcoming students back to campus this fall and is taking steps to keep students safe in the process. OC will offer students the opportunity to attend classes on campus safely in the fall by implementing mandatory daily health screenings for faculty, staff, students, visitors, and vendors, using social distancing protocols inside and outside the classroom, requiring masks or face coverings that cover the nose and mouth to be worn while inside OC campus buildings and while outside on the campus if social distancing is not feasible, and enforcing Centers for Disease Control and Prevention state and local safety guidelines. We know that our students have different learning and personal needs, particularly in the time of COVID-19. With that in mind, the instructional leadership team has strategically planned and partnered with other divisions on campus to ensure safe learning options for our students and the community. OC will continue to offer students the options of face-to-face, in-person, hybrid, in-person and online courses. We look forward to continuing to provide our students a high-quality learning experience while prioritizing the safety and well-being of our students and staff and faculty, Vice President for Instruction Tremaine Anderson said in a news release. Face-to-face, in-person, or hybrid, online and in-person classes will meet at specific times each week. In order to practice students' safe physical distancing in classrooms, no more than 50% of the classroom capacity will be allowed at one time. Half of the class will meet on campus for one class session per week, while the other half of the class joins in remotely, online, at the scheduled class time via Blackboard or Zoom, the release said. For lab-based classes, the labs will be taught in person with hands-on instruction, while the lecture or instructional portion of the course will be offered online. Fall 2020 fully online courses will continue as in the past, enabling students to learn online as it fits their personal schedule. Students will be responsible for developing their own schedule to complete class assignments on or before the due dates set by the professor. The fall 2020 plan has been created under the current health guidelines and protocols. Due to the unpredictable nature of the COVID-19 pandemic, there may be changes to this plan based on ongoing guidance from CDC, state, and local health officials. Odessa College also has an instructional pivot plan ready should it need to be activated at any time. Southwest Bank named in the best companies to work for in Texas. Southwest Bank was recently named one of the 2020 best companies to work for in Texas. The awards program is a project of Texas Monthly, the Texas Association of Business, Texas Society for Human Resources Management, and Best Companies Group. The statewide survey and awards program was designed to identify, recognize, and honor the best places of employment in Texas, benefiting the state's economy, workforce, and businesses. Companies across the state entered the two-part survey process that evaluated employee experiences and companies' workplace policies, systems, philosophies, practices, and demographics to determine the best companies to work for in Texas. The 2020 Best Companies to Work For in Texas list is made up of 100 companies. Southwest Bank ranked 9 out of 40 in the medium company category. This is the third year we have received this recognition, and we are honored that we continue to be selected. Lately, we have experienced many challenges, and our employees have risen to the occasion. We are fortunate to employ people who are adaptable and are able to fill in wherever there is a need, whether it is in the bank or in the communities we serve. It is our employees who truly make Southwest Bank one of the best companies to work for in Texas, Dewey Bryant, CEO of Southwest Bank, said. For more information, visit www.southwbank.com. Obituaries for Friday, July 17th. David Earl Miller. David Earl Miller, 72, of Odessa, passed away Wednesday, July 15th. He was born December 11th, 1947, in Brownwood to Thomas Jefferson Davis Miller and Murdy Lee Slate Miller. He married Joy Yvonne Westbury in 1969. Surviving him are his son, Timothy Fushi, and wife Stephanie of Odessa, 6 daughters, Tammy Torres of Odessa, Tanya Garcia and husband Adam of Goldsmith, Teresa Miller and wife Laquita of Odessa, Trinity Brown and husband Johnny of Odessa, Tina Langham and husband Craig of Gardendale, and Tony Strickland of Electra, 3 brothers, Thomas Tommy Miller, James Miller and wife Jane of Brownwood, Roy Miller of Cleburne, 3 sisters, Vonda Jean Evans Williamson of Early, Murdy Fulton and Elizabeth Cat Wilkins Lunsford, both of Odessa, 31 grandchildren and numerous great-grandchildren, numerous nieces and nephews and extended family members. He was preceded in death by his parents, his wife Joy, 4 sisters, Verna Lee Hartzell Fox, Dolly Dot Chamberlain, Ollie Modine Van Huss, and Martha Shirey, and 1 infant brother, Johnny Miller. Visitation will be held Friday, July 17th at Acres West from 4 to 6 p.m. Condolences to the family may be sent online at acreswestfuneral.com. Mary Ola Tipton Crider. Mary Ola Tipton Crider died peacefully at home in Odessa, July 13th, at the age of 98. She was born November 14th, 1921, in Deering, Missouri, to Andrew and Aletha Crowell Tipton. She married Jack Crider in 1945. Mary is survived by her daughter, Donna Kirkland of Odessa, son David Crider and wife Nancy of Roswell, New Mexico, son-in-law Steve Nance of Barksdale, 5 grandchildren, 9 great-grandchildren, and 3 great-great-grandchildren. She was preceded in death by her parents, her husband Jack, sisters Opal Fulkerson and Lila Meader, brother Burl Tipton, daughter Dale Crider Nance, and son-in-law Ken Kirkland. Visitation will be held from 7 to 9 p.m. Saturday, July 18th at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home in the chapel. Graveside services will be held at 10 a.m. Sunday, July 19th at Monahans Memorial Cemetery with Reverend Jimmy Braswell officiating. Services are entrusted to Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home of Odessa. Death notices. Tartar Coleman Sr. Tartar Coleman Sr., 88, of Odessa, died Tuesday, July 14th. A graveside service was held July 17th at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Christine Connie Christy Ramirez Diaz. Christy Ramirez Diaz, 51, of Midland, died Wednesday, July 15th, in Midland. A funeral service will be held at 11 a.m. July 18th at American Heritage Funeral Home in Midland. Monty Jackson. Monty Jackson, 65, of Odessa, died Thursday, July 16th. Services are pending with Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.